Hey friends, welcome to another episode of the 10 Laws Podcast with East Forest. I'm Mr. Forest. Thank you so much for joining us again this week. This week, I have Mr. Shane Moss back on. He's been on the show a few times, and he's funny and insightful and just a good dude. And I noticed when we did this, for those of you who will see some of it on video, you know, the first time I did a podcast with Shane was right at the beginning of the pandemic, as we talk about, like that first week or two. And he was clean shaven. And now he's got a capacious, wonderful beard that I believe has been growing in real time as an official time clock of the COVIDian era. So I feel like I've gotten to know him over this time, and we've both gone through a lot of changes, and it's just, he's super fun to talk to, and I always learn a lot, and I'm definitely want to get into that free will discussion that he and I talk about at some point in this. But first, I want to say thank you to the council members who are a part of this, supporters of this podcast. You guys, what a wonderful year. You know, I get to share stuff over there. I just shared a demo I found called Azure Winds, which is a long-form track from Ceremony. So it's a Ceremony track I never got to release in any way, but I'm able to release it over there. So I'm looking forward to doing a lot more of that on regular, and thank you to everybody over there. In the real world and the live world, we just announced tickets for Las Vegas, going to be at Area 15, which is, I believe, next door to Meow Wolf. It's a projection mapping space on all four walls. Should be exceptionally cool. So if you're in the area or want to come check that out, that's on February 16th. Go to eastforest.org. You can also check out links there for tickets for the United Kingdom and Ireland in early April. And just so you know, nearby in Arizona, we're probably going to have a date right after the Vegas one, and that should be announced soon. So get on our mailing list or keep an eye out there on social media, and we'll announce tickets because they are first come, first serve. You do get to lie down for these shows. There's Ceremony concerts. But we're also going to try, when we can, having seating that's essentially along the walls on the outside. So those folks don't get to lie down, but it's maybe a more affordable ticket. And for some people, perhaps that's, you know, what you want to do. And the only other live thing that's different, this one's virtual, is on February 12th, Journey Space. We're doing our third journey. And what I'm doing with these is premiering new Journey music. Sort of think of it like a new Music for Mushrooms album. So this one will be a four-hour new album that will be exclusive and premiering only on this space. So it's really like a premiere, and we're doing an active listening event where you can be at home, but we're joining in real time. And with Journey Space, when you sign up, you get preparation materials and support. And then, of course, real time, essentially on a Zoom, you get to be supported by facilitators while you go through your journey and you're listening to this wonderful new music. I hope you like it. And then afterwards, there's integration circles as well. So it's a lot about the community and the people you get to do this with in real time. And of course, the real-time support. But, you know, journeys take many different shapes and sizes. And for you, that may be just coming to listen. Like, you want to take a break. I mean, God knows, more than ever right now, it's important to cultivate repose and times of reflection, because we're doing and responding so much to this external stimuli, and we really need to take the moments to essentially do the opposite polarity. It's nourishing. Think of it like a vitamin. So if you like East Forest music and you want to listen to something new and you want to take a break to go deep, however you want to do that, Journey Space is there to support that and facilitate that journey. So go to journeyspace.com or go to eastforest.org and you can click through the links there. All right, my friends, this was a fun one, as they usually are, but this was a fun one. So this is our conversation with our dear friend, Shane Moss. The first time we podcasted, I think you were like my guest. That was literally like the weekend the pandemic hit. I remember you were like running around an apartment on a laptop trying to like find a corner to sit in.
Yeah.
He's like, and now look at you. You have a big sheet.
I have a big sheet behind me. Yeah, as I have a studio in my bedroom. So that's things are going pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah. 2 years later, and look at you now. You got a beard that matches your sheet.
Holy cow. Yeah, I still don't know what I'm doing. Just as I was like getting ready to start planning a tour for, I'm like, oh, what show should I tour with and everything? And then, man, I just did a Here We Are podcast a couple days ago and it just went out. I haven't done a COVID update show since like summer or something like that. You know, obviously, you see things, but I haven't actually talked with a virologist or whatever in some time. And
yeah, you see things.
I was
sure.
Like, yeah, you see,
I think everyone's been
there.
Seeing things. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And I was like, huh. Well, I don't know if I want to invest time into planning a tour just yet. But I don't know. We'll see.
It's a moving target, man.
It really is.
I just had something postponed, canceled from a few days ago, and then I'm supposed to do things in February and April overseas, and I really want to, but I don't know, you know?
It's tricky. I mean, do you produce your own shows and stuff? Do you, like, do your own marketing, or do you just, like, get gigs and
all in all,
do you have guarantees and stuff like that?
It's a mixed bag. Like, I'm an independent artist, so everything's sort of like whatever I want to do.
Yeah.
But it'll be anything from what you said, like, we do everything to someone hires me and I come out and it's plug and play.
Which is
always nice.
Well, I used to do plug and play and I had gotten away from it. I had completely freed myself of it. Like, I liked the freedom of running all of my own stuff. It has its own stressors and everything, but at the start of 2020, my New Year's resolution. So I'm for listeners, I'm a comedian or was a comedian or whatever. And
did you say comedian was a comedian?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know what that means.
I was correcting myself. I was a comedian. I don't know what I am now. And now I'm a comedic podcaster. I was a touring stand-up comedian before COVID. And the most of my career, I had done plug and play gigs. You'd go to a comedy club, you get paid some like flat rate, maybe you'd get a bonus or something if a certain number of people showed up, but there was very little risk. There's very little expectation for me to actually draw, market myself, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
It was just like you'd show up, a bunch of strangers would come up, oh, this guy's been on Conan and Comedy Central. Okay, I guess I'll check out this person I've never heard of. And some of my fans would show up as well. And that was like my deal for a long time. And then when I started getting into integrating science into comedy and doing themed shows, I realized that that was something that you don't just drop a topic like that on an unsuspecting audience, which I did for a long time. But it'd be like if I showed up to a comedy show and the comic just talked about nothing but soccer for an hour or whatever, I'd be like, well, that's funny if you like soccer, I guess, you know, but I kind of wish I would have known that ahead of time. And so I got into doing indie stuff and booking my own thing. So my New Year's resolution in 2020 was to only book 6 weeks at comedy clubs in 2020, which is like the plug and play kind of stuff.
Yeah,
that was my
traditional comedy club
only
tour.
6 weeks, no more than 6 weeks of comedy club work in 2020. And that was an easy one. Turned out to be like 1 week, not even, of comedy club work.
Well, you did though have that whole, you were doing hardcore, I remember, a lot of touring on your own. You had that whole thing going and it was going really well, and you had your own little lane with mixing science and comedy and creating these events. And those were hard ticket events. People coming just to see your thing. I mean,
yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So do you miss that? Because you had quite a you had your own lane there, I feel like. You still do, man. I mean, all of us are just pivoting how to now put it out there in the world. And I'm sure there's pluses and minuses to that grind on the road, too.
It's weird because the whole time... So I loved what I was doing. Not only was I doing this show Stand Up Science, where I'd have two scientists at a local university, every city that I went to join me for, I would do comedy and then they'd do like a TED Talk kind of thing. And then I'd riff on it. And it was like a really nice blend. And it was generating, even if the audiences didn't know who I was always, like every single member in the crowd, they at least knew what they were coming there for. They at least knew it was going to be some mix of science and comedy, and that's always really nice. The same with when I did psychedelic shows.
Like, right.
Some people knew me, some people didn't, but at least all of the audience was like interested in hearing that. And I'm good at what I do too. So like if they hadn't heard of me, but they were into psychedelics or science or whatever else, be like, oh, that guy's really funny. I'm going to check out. It was a nice way to slowly be building up. I loved it. I was living out of Airbnbs. I was in three cities a week. I had a lot of good stuff going on in my personal life as well. And then, the strangest thing is that I haven't missed performing very much at all. And I've missed money quite a bit. And before that time, like I wasn't killing it financially. I was like building, I felt like I had stability because I had the flexibility to, oh, this venue in town doesn't want to book me. Great. I can just go to this other venue next door. I don't really like the stage in this venue. I'll just find another one. I had just total freedom and it felt very stable. And I just, money was never a motivator for me until, you know, I guess it's like air or sex or something like that. But once you don't have it, you're like, oh no, money is very important. Holy crap. I never thought about this stuff before. I had a fortunate early introduction into my career. And looking back, I feel like maybe I got a little too lucky too soon and took a lot of things for granted. So this has been an eye-opening experience for me. And it's been lovely getting to, you know, I started this Mind Under Matter podcast in April of last year with Ramin Nazer. Have you not had Ramin Nazer on?
No, yet? I'd oh, love my to goodness. Meet Ramin.
Oh, he's so good. And I've everything that I'm doing right now is great. I have no, like, I was going to do a gig on December 29th for just do a spot at a friend's show that begged me to be on their show. How does that feel like
getting off the wagon with getting on stage like that in a brick and mortar place and then feeling like you could just drop back into it? Or does it feel a little scary?
I did one gig last year. It was because I booked it way in advance back in May when everything was like looking promising. I booked this an MC gig at this Meatdelic psychedelic conference in Las Vegas. Yeah. And I had a little bit of a freak out because they sent me the itinerary. They told me I was to do like a couple minutes in between each speaker and like open each day with 15 minutes. I'm like, that should be easy enough. And then I looked at the schedule and I actually had like 20 minutes in between each speaker. Oh, and I'm like, wow, that means, I mean, it's nice to have some buffer time, but that means if people like actually keep to their time, I'm going to be doing like 3 hours of material.
Yeah, it's like, where's the writing
pretty
team?
Yeah. Easily. And it turns out it was really like, it felt very natural. Other than remembering some of my old material, Any new stuff that I had went well. I felt very comfortable on stage. I was actually hoping that it was going to do a little more for me. I was hoping it was going to fire something up inside of me. And I was just like, oh, okay, this is what I do. I remember this. I don't know. I feel like I've lost a little bit of the passion for it. I feel like I've been a little bit turned off by aspects of the comedy community. And maybe that's my own thing. And I don't know. Sometimes I'm like, what a trashy fucking art form I got myself into.
Well, hey, on one hand, the comedy world is kind of has been going through its bit of a renaissance. And,
yeah.
You know, and then like the new sitcom is Netflix. But there's also so much interest in it. Mm-hmm. But I do think comedians right now are playing a really important role. I'm really not trying to blow smoke. Like, I had this like super high realization at one point a few months back. I'm like, oh, comedians are the shamans of modern day because they're total tricksters. Like, we need that sort of just like absurdity and like reflecting it back. And of course the laughter is great, but it's just like, who's really doing that? I'm a little less interested in like, no offense, but it's like when we're putting like comedians on platforms. I mean, some of them have things to say, but some it starts to bleed into like their personality. You look at some even like Joe Rogan. I'm a fan of Joe, but it's also turned into like Joe's like more of an influencer than a comedian in a lot of ways. And
yeah.
So anyway,
yeah, that's Joe and I are at two very opposite ends of our takes on COVID, and it's a whole thing.
That'd be a great show. It'd be great for you to be on that show and just hash it out.
Yeah, I would enjoy that as well. I would also enjoy even more, which is what I've told him, is just to get some random old infectious disease people from the University of Austin, Texas to come on the show, and rather than cherry picking Alex Jones type-ish
or at least people to bring them on at the same time, or yeah. Why not? It's like, because it's very difficult in a long form podcast like that when someone's just espousing their point of view, whatever that point of view is, for a long time. I mean, at the end of the day, like all the information coming at us now, you're just sort of like, maybe like that person says so. And if you hear it for hours, you do start to, it sinks in, and then you listen to something else and it's different. Then you listen to something else and it's different. It's just like, there's nothing to hold on to.
I had this lovely conversation. There's this guy at Duke University, an evolutionary anthropologist, who wrote a book on metabolism. And because that's what he studies. He is an anthropologist. He studies these Hanza people in, I forget exactly where they are, you know, some like hunter-gatherer and pastoral cultures that he lives amongst himself and everything through much of his career, and put out this book. And his publishers kind of got him to give it a fancy like cover of burn, you know, blowing the lid off this and that ideas of diet and nutrition. And he's a super grounded guy. And a lot of the stuff is just like, hey, you don't got to listen too much to these diet fad things. Like a lot of what various things like paleo or whatever, carnivore diet or these other things, they're all kind of getting at some of the same things, which is just caloric intake and blah, blah, blah. But he's a really good evolutionary thinker. And we were then talking about the various, you're inundated with health stuff. Everyone has all these different takes. How do I know to trust him? How do you know to trust anybody? Yeah. You know, how do you, anyone can make these claims. A lot of times you have a personal trainer that got some shady certification that took him like 2 months of training and, you know, $500, and they're certified and they don't actually have scientific training and they're peddling this and that. And we were talking about this, and he was making the point you were just making, which was just like, we're just inundated with so much information now. And we just assumed that being so connected with so many people would be good for us.
It's broken our minds. Yeah. I was talking to Charles Eisenstein yesterday, and we were talking about this idea of like, well, I was sort of thinking like, what if that's, if you're trying to like step back, you know, is there meaning to this? So maybe the meaning is to break our brains. So you have to learn, you just have to learn like what does intuition mean? You know, you have nowhere to hide and you have nothing to stand on anymore. And not only do you have to stand on some kind of choice, you're gonna have to back it up. You can't just be like, I don't know, I'm gonna shirk back into the corner. You have to say like, what does it mean to learn to listen to putting input together in your own body and mind and make choices? And that's a tall order. I'll just get more information, or I go to this resource, and yeah, it's broken.
Well, our intuition, first off, just to finish the thing that I was going to say about the way he summed up his metaphor for what you're saying is, we just had a moment where we are both just kind of frustrated because we've both been dealing with, there's been a plethora of like conspiracy and whatever else. And he's been getting it because he put out a book about nutrition. And so all of these different like nutrition grifters kind of question his stuff. And, you know, never in the 8 years that I was doing my podcast did I have anyone be like, this primatologist doesn't know what they're talking about. But a second people are confronted with an inconvenient thing, all of a sudden, you know, and they haven't been interested in science their whole lives. Now they like cherry pick things. Anyhow, we are having this cathartic, we were both venting a little bit. And he just said, he's like, I think humans got, as a species, just got promoted too high. You know, you just like keep on getting promoted until eventually you're in a job that you can't handle. He's like, that's where we're at as a species right now. And I think the internet may have done that.
Yeah. Yeah. Very well could have. I'm gonna, for the sake of conversation, and this is a personal interest of mine too, I was just talking about this morning, but it's not that, you know, science or an institution of science is like good or bad. I think in some ways, some of the questioning that's happening or the discomfort, if you take it out of the polarization of the extreme poles, it's the fact that there's not much room at this moment in time for dissent or even On some levels, I've heard of personal friends putting up information about like vitamin D or certain stuff, and it gets taken down by an AI, or maybe it's a human, probably an AI, and it's banned. And it's like, wait a minute, hold up. Like, we should be able to, many of us have bazillions of questions, and I can't say that the internet's going to answer them for you, but we shouldn't just have a narrative that's monolithic. Like vax. It's like, but that's even for the scientific community, that's not always true. There obviously are people who shouldn't do that or can't. Or
right.
I tried to go to the doctor the other day. I had a physical and I said, I'd love, hey, can I pay for a test to see what my antibody level is at? And he misunderstood me and he just gave me a COVID test. So the results were just like, you don't have COVID. And I was like, I just want to know. I'm just curious. I'd love to know. It's just good information to have. And that's not available to us out there without paying for it. Things like that. It's like, well, there's nothing wrong with, let's understand, what does it mean to have natural immunity? How does that compare and combine with a vaccine? How does it not? Let's just look at that logically. Instead, it's like, how dare you bring that up? You know, you're destroying our mission. And then you get into Omicron and it spreads like wildfire no matter what. And it's kind of like, well, everyone accepts that now. That seems to be a mainstream acceptance. So why does it have to be about, I need to get another vaccine or not? It's like, maybe. Depends on my situation. I mean.
Yeah, well, Omicron, by the way, it if it is five times more transmissible than the OG COVID, which had a R naught of two. So for under normal conditions where no one has any immunity of any kind, that means one single case will on average spread it to two other people.
Yeah.
And which most people know this by now, but the flu has 1.4 and Omicron might have 10.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Which that would make it about the most contagious virus like in human history. Measles is 15, but it's also less virulent. But then there's also we don't know long term measles, for example. If a child gets measles, they're going to have immune deficiencies. They can have immune amnesia and be more susceptible to other illnesses for the rest of their lives. But you don't, every time they have another illness pop up, no one goes, well, that's because of the measles. You know, they just say right. Oh, you have the flu now. And so I think that's why there's a lot of caution. I would say that it's first in terms of the censorship stuff is a very tricky issue. I don't always know what to tell people there. It's definitely, those are subjective. I think it's important to separate subjective ideas and objective ones. There are pretty clear objective, the science is never settled, but there is still an objective reality of what COVID does to somebody, or what a vaccine does to somebody, or how much protection of a vaccine does, how much protection a mask offers. Whether or not scientists are modeling that accurately is another matter, but that is an objective reality.
Right, or if it's languaged objectively, frankly, you know.
Right.
Because
that's also different than subjective ideas of freedom, which are our opinions, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. don't, there is no objective idea of freedom. The very idea of it doesn't exist without our minds to, whereas COVID exists even if every human goes extinct.
And you're saying it's difficult to say, I mean, I would love to live in a world where subjective ideas are shared with abandon, but yeah. you're in this new cesspool of the internet quantum amplification where yeah. it's like, well, what does it mean inside what's considered a public health emergency to share information? But then yeah. it's a very tricky situation because some people generally don't agree with those opinions. And but then I want to be able to share any opinion I wish to share.
Believe me, so first off, this isn't new. So like I said, I produce all my, I'd been producing my shows for a while, and I started doing this Good Trip tour in 2015. And it was 111 city tour. So I started in the fall of 2015, and I would run a lot of Facebook ads. It has a trippy poster with mushrooms and stuff on it. And that's how a lot of people would come out to the show in Des Moines, Iowa, or whatever else. And then in February of 2016, when the Trump administration took over, whether it was because of trying to halt bullying or just new updates or whatever, algorithms started catching my ad because it was just any drug stuff. Generally, hey, we need to make sure, I'd have to get on the phone with Facebook people and talk it out with them. They don't even know a lot of times what these algorithms right. are doing or right. why. We certainly don't want child porn or something like that being put on Facebook platforms. And so, so much so, here's how crazy it was. So then I have my show Stand Up Science, which I was touring with. It had a cartoon picture of me where half of it's my face, no drug content whatsoever. This is a science show. The other half is an anatomic, it has a skeleton of my head and some muscle and stuff like that, and Ramin Nasser's art. And that was getting flagged for being too graphic. And again, I would have to get on with Facebook and do that. So the idea that this is new and part of this globalist narrative that came along with the pandemic and moving the vaccine, I don't think it's all that new. And it is really tricky. I guess the main thing that I have an issue with is that some people are weaponizing disinformation to use it in their battle for their subjective freedom of free speech. They're saying, I believe in free speech. Even if this is misinformation, it is my right to spread it because that's free speech. And they often aren't letting their audience in on the gag. And so those people then become collateral damage in their kind of freedom campaign, which seems awfully advantageous when they get a lot of clickbait and actually, you know, someone gets banned from this and that, and they end up, their Patreon goes up, they end up getting on the world's biggest podcast from it. And it's actually the, like, if you want to be a scientist, like evolution, I know evolutionary biologists and psychologists, I've been interviewing them for years. It's my favorite field. If you want to get on, like, say, one of these big podcasts out there, one of the best ways to do it is getting some sort of conflict with something, with academia. Like, no one wants boring old scientists like studying butterflies or something. You want, this guy was fired and cancel culture and this and that. And that's all the science that people are hearing now is this, the science they don't want you to know. And whereas most science is just science no one wants to hear, just regular old science that no one wants to take a course for and stuff. So that's something that drives me a little crazy. And everything that you're saying is absolutely right. I don't know how I feel about that. I feel vitamin D is a little oversold, but I don't
you're just
think
deficient
that.
You just need more, bro. I checked that too when I was in there.
Yeah, I was offered vitamin D injections recently, and I looked, or B12 injections recently, and I was I'm going to look into this a little bit. And I was like, well, if you have a deficiency, it's good for you, but you don't want to necessarily just get it willy nilly. And that's the thing. Like, I could have just gone into someone was going to give it to me as a Christmas gift, and like, I'm a scientific minded person that looked into it. Like, okay, I'm not of this age. I'm not vegan. And so I don't have these deficiencies. So why would I get this? But it's like this nutrition place. It's like diet, nutrition. Wow. This place cares about my health. And that's the thing that I think people are being taken for a ride a little bit by people that aren't even trying to take them for a ride, because there's no peer review in that process. And like you were saying, when you went into the doctor's office, your doctor has 15 minutes to spend with you before they go to the next person.
Oh, he was also like 12. I mean, you know,
and overwhelmed.
Yeah. He never followed up on any of this stuff, you know, with my lab results. I was just looking at it on the screen. I'm like, I guess I'll Google about this, you know.
If I walk into a GNC right now, someone will give me all the attention I could ever want, you know, make me feel heard, offer me suggestions. I can spend all day in there if I like to. And so there's also like a bedside manner involved, and I don't know, man, it's a really complicated situation.
Well, one thing that I think is difficult about, like, it's not that I hate to say, like, the scientific pedestal or whatever that side of things is. Mm-hmm. Most of the times when I do hear those people talking, like experts in those fields, that just from my own anecdotal experience, there's this snarkiness to us and sort of this looking down, like, those idiots out there are like,
yeah,
there's this and everything else is, I mean, I'm not going to say it, but you know, I mean, you know what I mean? And that's not good. That's just increasing the divide, because there are people who have adverse reactions to vaccines. It might be, we're looking percentage wise, extremely low, but to say
about
like that's
50,
meaningless. It's, well, not to those people, you know. Now we're just sort of, people tune out, you know, who are like, I'm looking for. I've still been waiting for someone out there to give an interview who's an expert in medicine that says a little bit of this and then adds in some credence to things that are being said out there. If anything, to tamp down, it's like, look, there's some truth to that, but you don't have to worry because of this and that. If you look at the percentage of that versus like, those people are idiots.
Yeah.
Or that's totally fake. That is fake. It's like, well, it can't all be fake.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Well, that's, I mean, a lot of the talking heads on cable news and various podcasts and stuff are, you know, just a little more, have a little more personality and are a little more opinionated and a little less dry. As someone who can, like, I'm happy to admit that I often come off condescending, mostly because I've been attacked by people for over a year and a half, and after a while just gets old. I'm tired of being called a sheeple and a corporate shill, because I'm like, I had a post just like, hey everyone, I just got a vaccine in my town, you know, when there was a line. I was like,
my town
just got 3,000 more vaccines than they were meant to. So there's extra ones, even if you don't normally qualify. I just went and got it. You can too. That's it. And just absolutely hounded by microchip. This is genocide. I'm screenshotting this so that when you die, I'm screenshotting all these. I can't wait till you die from your chew, this and that. And I'm like, oh, well, you know what? I'm going to push back because I'm a comedian that can say,
Ken, it's a heckler.
You're a fucking heckler. But what I'll say in my experience, and if you want to, what I'd recommend to yourself and anyone, if you want to feel a little better about the scientific community, and it's unfortunately the people that you're never going to hear because it's these talking heads on the news, I can tell you that as someone who's interviewed scientists every week for 8 years, and when I was doing stand-up science, I'd have to randomly find two scientists in every city that I went to. That's three times a week. Two who were happy to, they jump at the chance to talk to the public and get the word out. It's a part of their job that they're expected to talk to the public in every opportunity that they can. And I actually find that every scientist that I've talked to, there's some snarky people out there, but the scientists that I've talked to actually, like, I know this because I ask so many dumb questions. If you listen to my podcast, yeah. I'm wrong so many times over and over. It's intimidating. Yeah. How can I not be? They know more about this particular field, and they have the patience of someone that has to lecture to hungover college kids, you know, like every other day of their life, you know, many times a week, and you develop a certain patience for things after that. And I think that you could, you know, at the start of December of 2020, I had this woman, Nina Pfefferman, on asking, you know, the new vaccine was rolling out. And I was the one that had like kind of some condescending takes about, this isn't really like, are these side effects everyone's making a thing out of, just because I was so sick of being her.
Yeah.
You can go back and watch that, and you can see her with caring and compassion be like, well, you don't want it making the same point that you just made. Like, that's horrifying if you're a parent and that happens to your kids. And it is an important conversation to have, because it's an important conversation to have a difference between correlation and causation as well. If you get in a car accident 2 weeks after your COVID vaccine, it's probably not because of the vaccine, even though it came afterwards. So there's a little bit of stuff like that going on about it as well.
That's been one of my favorite things to say in my head, is probably not, you know, as opposed to it could be. And it's just sort of like, well, a lot of these things I hear, it's like, well, I mean, probably not, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Sure, maybe. Maybe there's microchips, but probably not. You know, I mean, I think very probably not. And I'm going to run with that. I got to pick things to decide on. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. But it's probably, you know, Occam's razor. It's like a lot of these things are mostly what they seem.
Yeah.
Like
so,
on face value.
I do think Occam's razor is really important. And so one, first of all, I would say that if you wanted to look at things scientifically, so say you see one of these people and like, this person's being censored and why aren't they allowed to say this? Well, you can look at science scientifically, which I can bet you that where are you right now?
Physically?
Where do you live again?
Oh, Boise. Yeah. Boise, Idaho.
Boise. Yeah. So whatever university in Boise, Idaho, just you could look it up. Just look up the infectious disease department. Don't even like look at their, just grab a name out of a hat. Do that 10 times if you want to. And just write them, ask them to be on the show. I'm sure if they're not too busy, they'd be happy to join you. Ask them if they're vaccinated themselves. Ask them if they have their children, their own children, vaccinated themselves. And because I can tell you from having scientist friends that like, I'd be like, hey, do you want to go for a hike? And like a biologist being like, no, thank you. Not until I see a little more data. Like I've seen the actual behavior that these like no-name scientists that no one's ever heard of have. In fact, it was broke to me when I was traveling around. I might have told this the first time I was on. I was doing stand-up science, and I had a biologist cancel on me. February 2019, she's like, there's this COVID thing going around in China and I don't feel comfortable in a room with people right now. And I'm like, okay, crazy. And then I was like,
weirdo.
Well, do you still want to, you could be on my podcast if you want to. And she's like, I don't know about you coming to my office. And she's like, can we do it outside? I'm like, outside? There's planes flying over. I've done them outside before. It's not as good. I'm like, you want to come to my Airbnb or something? Like, I didn't know what's the deal. I always come to people's home or office. She's like, maybe I could get a large conference space, but you would need to make sure to be at like the other end of it. And we couldn't shake hands or anything like that. And she's like, you know, you're touring, you're kind of a biological vector. I'm like, a biological vector? What the fuck are you talking about?
Is that
about?
Cool?
And that wasn't someone that sat there like plotting something in case some random comic reached out to them, you know? And so I guess I could say anyone could do that. You could survey, you know, the top 100 universities, randomly go into both the infectious disease department, but also you would need to pull off some conspiracy. Not only, like, there's not like three scientists in the world. There's like 40 people in the infectious disease department at Boise, whatever university there, I'm sure. And I haven't even looked at it. And then you'd also have to, because there's like biological mechanisms at work. So you'd also have to like pay off any biologist to any, you know, and I've seen people that like study insects that are like, geez, I don't know about COVID. And they're like looking to pull their kids out of school again and stuff. Whereas, so it would take like an awful lot of coordination to pay off all those people and to keep a lid on all of that. But what takes no effort whatsoever is for some wellness place in town to be like, hey, you know what you really need is your vitamin B shot. That'll protect you from, don't worry about this new, you don't want to do some experimental vaccine, do you? Have you heard about kids and autism?
There's a middle ground, of course, where it's like we need to be able to talk about preventative health in general,
right,
and talk about vaccines. And I'm just sad that for some reason, right, we're in this ecosystem right now. It's almost like one or the other, and they're somehow both bad. If it's like, But what's wrong with, we should be able to talk about what does it mean to be healthy. Of course it's good if your immune system is strong. Is that going to protect everyone? No.
Right.
Is a vaccine part of that picture? Of course, for some, probably a lot of people. But look, I think that should be their choice. If you could, if we had a vaccine, it's like, hey, it stops the spread. That's a pretty strong argument. It does, but right now it's like, it's going to spread around. It almost seems like no matter what we do, because we don't have everyone on board in the world and not everyone has access to vaccines anyway,
it's going to do its thing.
And so that's a known.
They just released they are releasing unpatented vaccines that will get other countries the ability to, like, Omicron came out of Africa in an area that was poor. And, you know, when you're talking about, like, oh, we need to improve health, I mean, you're talking about ending global poverty.
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge, there's no easy answer to that one. I mean, toxicity to exercise, to food chain supply, to...
Yeah. And even still, it's, you know, have access. You ever heard of white nose fungus on bats?
Should I have?
No.
White nose fungus. Nope.
So let me break down, in case people think this is just a matter of, like, being healthy enough, what some of the issue is, so there's this white nose fungus in bats that they actually traced it. They actually contact traced it back to a European caver, a single dude who brought his caving boots with him to, like, Maine or something like that, to New England somewhere, went caving, and he had some fungus from England on his boot that some bats got into.
Wow.
And this fungus ended up wiping out about 99% of that particular bat species. Some of them have started bouncing back, but it was a mass extinction event for this particular bat species because it introduced a novel pathogen that they didn't have a immune system. It wasn't because those bats were lacking something in diet or exercise, you know. And the same with the reason why they have, if you go to a campsite, they might have a sign that says no outside firewood. And that's because people bring in firewood from hundreds of miles away, and you have a beetle or something like that. That have you ever heard about the Red Queen effect by chance?
No.
You'll love it. So this applies to so many aspects of life. And this is something that I've been fascinated with long, long before COVID. There's a really good book about it called The Red Queen by Matt Ridley, who I don't like that many of his takes these days, but great book. Anyway, it's about the evolutionary arms race, about a predator gains an advantage over a prey, and then, like, that prey will start kind of being driven into extinction, but then the ones that evolve an adaptation to get away from that predator are able to, say, outrun that predator, and now the predators will be driven to extinction, except a few that gain a new advantage to catch up to the... And as evolution keeps on driving complexity, you still end up in the same place. The Red Queen is from Alice in Wonderland. The Red Queen is running with Alice and running in the background, isn't moving at all. And Alice says, why are we running? We aren't going anywhere. And the Red Queen says, it takes all the running we can do just to stay in one place. And so there's this virus host interaction that's been happening for over 4 billion years. It's actually one of the reasons why sexual reproduction started in the first place. It was just cloning before that. It was a way of mixing up genetic code so that you could outwit fast evolving viruses. And so there's usually this balance of a virus gains an advantage, and then there's a new generation that swaps out their DNA, and then they change the lock and key mechanism on these viruses that are picking the locks evolutionarily on a host organism. And you're in these evolutionarily stable systems in these really intricate interconnected ecosystems. And unfortunately, in our modern world, what happens is we have global travel and we have movement that we never had in 4 billion years of life, over 4 billion years of life before, where something from halfway around the world can get in, some new fish or something like that can be introduced. This happens. It's wiping out trees in Colorado right now just because there's some beetle that people brought in on their firewood, and 60% of some tree species is, you know, then impacts lumber and everything else. And it's really complicated. That sign on the campground isn't there because they are trying to like infringe on your freedom or something like that. The sign outside of the dock at the lake that's saying wash your boat so you don't introduce a new species into the next river that you dock in or whatever. That's not, you know, it's tricky with mandates and fining people for this and that. And we all want to have our freedom, but they are meant to be guidelines that are, and they're very imperfect and they're often messaged incorrectly, but that's kind of what they're meant to do. So one of the big things that's happening is that biodiversity loss is forcing species closer and closer and closer together. And then because of that, zoonosis, viruses are able to find a new environment in a new host, that there's sometimes an invasive species. Usually that doesn't work out well for them, but once in a while they hit the jackpot and they're able to take off. And once in a great while that happens to humans as well. And it's an unfortunate situation in our modern world. And really the only defense that we have to combat it is the advantages of modern medicine and modern infrastructure changes with ventilation systems and monitoring systems and testing. And it's super unfortunate. And I wish none of this was happening, but there's definitely a little more to it than like, well, if we just get these trees to like do jujitsu more, they'll not get viruses. Like, well, there's just a little more going on, and it takes so long to explain that sometimes it's like, just fucking listen, you don't understand, I've been researching this for 40 years, you know. And so people will have a little bit of that reaction. And another bias is a curse of knowledge. You play board games ever?
Sometimes the family's into it, but I'm the guy who's always like,
I love board games. Yeah. And I'll take all this time to learn a board game, and then and I'll make mistakes and I'll get frustrated and I'll watch videos and I read the instructions and I play it several times, and then I finally get it down and I get good at the board game. And then I go to teach it to somebody else, and I can't believe they don't fucking understand what I'm trying to explain. What am I saying that's unclear? This is how the thing moves to this. This is a cognitive bias called the curse of knowledge. Doug Stanhope has a really fun joke about it, which is that he says something to the effect of, within 30 minutes of learning something new, he's yelling at people for not knowing that thing. And that's something we all need to check ourselves on. I set on Mind Under Matter recently. That's like one of my New Year's goals, is to do less of the curse of knowledge, stuff. But I can't.
It's for everybody.
I can't help myself.
It's the thing that often holds us back on, you know, sort of higher levels of growth. It's that holding on to that righteousness. It's absolutely, when you think you know something, it's just, we need a little humility to like espouse what you know, and then espouse what you think you know versus what you feel. And
yeah,
there's all sorts of crazy shit, man. I mean, down in southern Utah, or at my place, the Fish and Wildlife folks, the federal agency, they do this practice where they dump rotenone, which is a poison, into the headwaters of the streams to basically, because they want to kill everything so that they can put in a particular sporting fish that will then be good for fishing. And from their point of view, like, well, the rotenone's not really bad for you and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, so this is what we do. And we have science to back that up and stuff. I'm like, would you drink a glass of rotenone? I mean, this is our community. We don't, this is what we drink. This is our water. Right, we don't want it. Right. And they don't listen to us. And it's this huge battle. And but it's just like, you kill every, it kills everything. And there's this hubris to think like nature doesn't have a good balance.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
I get it. We want to get rid of some fish that you think is maybe wasn't there 100 years ago. Now it is. And this plant was brought in, but now it's actually a new habitat for these new animals, but it's prickly. And yeah, it wasn't there 1,000 years ago, but it's here now. I don't, you know, and it's like, we always think like, sometimes we can mess around like that. And like you say, these things have been going on for sometimes billions of years, let alone thousands of years. And there is a hubris to think that we can just get in there and tinker. And it's so much more complex.
Humans already tinkered. Like that was...
We tinkered.
We tinkered long before the word science ever existed.
Oh, yeah.
Science is revealing what some of our tinkering has
done.
We have
evidence to show the tinkering results.
I mean, humans, hunter-gatherers, they were... So the reason why we still have why we still have large mammals in Africa was because they evolved alongside humans, and they evolved to learn to be skittish of these gangly looking stupid weak ass primates that actually are really good at communication and cooperation and tool use. And they learned to fucking run. Nothing else did that. So we got to Australia and all these huge mammals over there. There used to be all sorts of like bigger kangaroos and all sorts of stuff that we just wiped out. Saber-toothed tiger was king before humans showed up. And they looked at humans like a cheap, quick meal and then found out otherwise. But humans used to take a form of hunting. They used to just drive mammoths off of cliffs. Just like, there's 100 mammoths. Let's just drive them off a cliff. And then
we'll,
you got
we'll
a
eat
meal.
One or two. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll eat one or two of them. And they didn't know, you know, like my dad used to, he grew up, they would dump stuff in the, they would dump trash in the river. And that's the thing too, is our intuition was built from those, like, yeah, you just run the things off the, why would you bother like running after a mammoth and jumping on it and stabbing it or whatever? You just run them off the cliff and go and get the,
pick out the good parts.
Yeah, exactly.
The stuff that wasn't smashed, I'll eat that.
So yeah, there's going to be horrifying things. And so yeah, I don't know, in terms of like, there are some like kind of naturalistic fallacies of like nature is just going to do its thing. And we could say that, but we'll also be, you know, we'll that's not always in the best interests of humans. If you're interested in human life, that's a little bit of a different conversation. Cause there's like, you remember when murder hornets made all the, like there's a big pandemic and then like murder hornets too, then now there's murder hornets. What the hell is going on? And I got a hold of an entomologist and was like, what's really good? Murder hornets? Are you kidding me? Is this just clickbait or what? And he's like, yeah, you know, the name's ridiculous. It's giant Asian hornets. They have an even fancier scientific name, of course, but there's a legitimate concern, which is going back to that same Red Queen process. These giant Asian hornets have a thing where they can, where they find a beehive, they'll go in and they'll see bees in there, and then they can't take the bees on themselves, but they can go out and get other big hornets and swarm the bees and kill them all. They lop their heads off and then they get their whole hive. The bees, where these giant Asian hornets have evolved, have very slowly, after over like, you know, millions of years, they've evolved this defense where if a hornet comes in there, the bees swarm the hornet and kill it before it goes and gets its friends to cooperate. Sometimes the hornet escapes and gets its friends. Sometimes it doesn't. And there's like this nice little homeostasis, this balance.
Gang warfare. Just, as long as it's in balance. Yeah.
Exactly. As long as it's in balance. But then what happens is a giant Asian hornet comes over on a shipping container and accidentally gets released. And our bees have no defense for these giant Asian hornets. So when they do come out, they'll just very easily wipe out any beehive that they come across very easily. And that impacts us that need bees as pollinators and like, oh my God, it's just endless with that. And so, you know, there's a lot of these plagues and everything else, they came from a city life. And then not only did we, so viruses spread more with confinement. So not only did we unknowingly confine ourselves more and more in cities, but then we connected these cities. So confined people here spreading their own diseases
with
more,
too much hand sanitizer. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's a hygiene hypothesis too, which is that we're too sanitary.
That's what I mean. Yeah. Like that we get weak. Yeah.
That's where a lot of the allergies are coming from, too. And we can talk about that.
It's the wet
wipes.
That's
a little bit different. Yeah. And so then we also took livestock and packed them close together. And
yeah, that's terrible. Yeah.
We're creating this petri dish of you're packing livestock together where viruses can take off in the livestock. And so we're eating. And then
pumping it full of antibiotics. More. Yeah, I mean, it's a nightmare.
It really is. And actually, there's a lot of the current industrial farming has like state-of-the-art biosecurity so that they don't have to use as many antibiotics and stuff. And you kind of...
You just can't do it at that scale. I mean, it's... we have friends who are ranchers down in southern Utah too. And I mean, if when they do it, it's smaller scale and they're in pastures that are rotating and key lining the soil. Yeah. It's a completely different process.
Yeah.
The animals are completely different too.
Yeah.
But you can't, there's no way we could produce that much beef, you know, for $2 a burger or something or whatever. Yeah, there's just no way. It should be like $10 a burger.
Yeah. I'm in agreement with you. And now we have, 7 billion mouths to feed or something. You know, it's just, we're in a very, very complex system.
And you're eating bugs. Bug bricks of protein jello bricks like the movies.
Actually, that's not the worst idea. I had a...
chicken.
Yeah, I've eaten some bugs before. I did an episode on eating bugs recently, and other cultures do it sometimes. Who knows? Or maybe I see the like fake DNA meat that made some. I haven't talked to anyone about it. I imagine it's gone nowhere. But we'll probably keep on coming up with novel solutions. But it is overwhelming, and you're absolutely right that. There needs to be better ways of communicating these things that aren't so condescending. And then I also think on the other side of that, people need to take a little more of a personal interest in, you know, being receptive towards this stuff instead of like incredulity, which for someone that's been interested in science for a very long time, I, without lecturing anyone or anything, I'll be like, oh, I just heard this thing out about sloths. And I'll just watch people's eyes glaze over. You know, so it's a tricky situation. And then at what point, you know, when the stakes are high enough, do you go, you need to listen. This is actually important. Sorry for all my fun facts before. But... And we all have specialties, you know, it's like, I mean,
and we all have blind spots come down to some of that righteousness again for all of us. I mean, we all have elements of that in our personality, in our psyche, things we're protecting, things that we've invested in, that are part of our identities. And it takes a lot of humility and humbleness to say like, okay, maybe I was a little wrong about XYZ, but not all wrong. And, you know, that's hard for all of us, especially on a public stage. There's a kind of humiliation there, and you just dig in. And especially then when you're in a tribe that has, you have this camp with you, it's like, you got to stick to the script. And we have a script. We have a mission.
Well, you're exactly right, too, with tribalism. I mean, we say tribalism like it's a bad thing, and it is in so community. Many ways. But we have community, too. We're social animals, and that's part of how we assess what we know, there's a really fantastic book called The Knowledge Illusion, Why We Never Think Alone. And one of the fascinating things is that people tend to estimate how much they know about a given topic based on how YouTube. Much the people around them know about a given topic. So if I'm talking to you, in my mind, subconsciously, I assume that I know more about making music than I do. You assume you know more about like comedy or whatever. That's the idea of it. So they do various ways of testing this. So this is equally fucked with YouTube, as you said, and having access to the internet, because our minds are not just in our skulls. It's also what information do I have access to, which through our evolutionary history was within our tribe. You know, this person's good at finding the right berries. This person's good at building the thing. This person's good at hunting. And collectively, we're good at all of these things. Now we have the internet that gives us access to knowledge, and we tend to mistake things for what is knowable with what is already known. And so they do fun ways of testing this, which is one of my favorite ways they studied this. They did a thought experiment. They had two conditions. They made up a story. They said, scientists found this new mineral. They've learned everything about it. And just published it. How much do you know about this mineral? And people are like, you know, I think I know a decent amount about this mineral. A mineral you just heard of that's a made up fictional mineral. And then the other condition is they say the exact same thing. Scientists found this mineral. They know everything about it. It's classified information. How much do you know about this mineral? People are like, what do you mean? I don't know anything about that mineral, because they know they can't access it because it's classified. And so it's the exact same. So we think that just because you could Google something, there's something in your mind that's like, I already know it without even Googling it. You know, without
if anything, it gives me more compassion for humans, because we're so susceptible in a sense. We're like sponges. And again, it goes back to this thought, but how much information is coming at us? Information sickness. And so it's like, what do you expect? You're going to think you know about all sorts of shit. It's watched some videos on that, and I think I got a handle on it. And, you know, you wouldn't do this with other fields, right? Like, for some reason, science, which is not something I know more than what I studied up to college, and things like that. And so maybe we all know a little bit about the scientific method and so forth, but I wouldn't go to like a guy who knows how to fix my car, which I don't know. I know 2% of what he knows. And I'm like, you clearly know a lot more about this than I do, and I need help. I'm not going to pretend. I have watched some videos. I don't know how to fix this. I have no idea. Way beyond my pay grade. Or certain electrical stuff. It's like, I'm scared. I don't want to screw that up. You know, and it goes on and on and on. But if you lump the entire scientific community into sort of, I don't know. You know, maybe there's some shenanigans. And it's like, people make mistakes, sure. But like, there's a lot there that most of us don't understand about the methods of what it is to be discursive and objective.
And make things falsifiable. There are ways, there are a lot of ways we can make things falsifiable ourselves and make predictions and check and see how those predictions worked out later on and find out what was wrong. And
but we have biases that are models. Often oh, we don't of admit or know.
We love
mostly
to say,
don't
I
know.
Told you so. Yeah. It's like everyone, all of COVID made everyone just like, so like I t- whether you're a conspiracy person or a science person
or a prepper
whatever else, you're like, I told you that you needed to be listening to me the whole time. And also we're, you know, it's interesting that you bring up that point about the mechanic and the electrician and stuff. These are interactions that we actually do deal with, and what we've learned about many of the interactions with expertise like mechanic or electrician is that some of these experts are going to swindle us, and not always,
that's part of the human condition too. Yeah,
not always are they even intentionally doing it. They're not even necessarily crooked, you know. We all tell ourselves stories of like how much we deserve or what we think we're worth, or we fudge things, you know. You play a board game, or I play pickleball a lot. I'll misremember the score in my favor quite a bit.
Do you?
You know, it happens, you know, and we all do this. The evolution of self-deception is another important and interesting field, which is that it confidence helps us. It helps us with status. It helps us get out of bed in the morning. And the average person just overestimates their ability to drive or their IQ or anything else by a little bit. They even have, this is a fucking fascinating one. You take your face, take anyone's face, and you know, you can morph things. So a lot of attractiveness is based on symmetry. It's very difficult to make something symmetrical, both genetically, but also if you're symmetrical, you probably haven't had a lot of environmental insults in your life, especially early on in your life, which is a cue that your upbringing was maybe good as well, blah, blah, blah. And so, so anyhow, you take anyone's face and you make it, you know, 10% more symmetrical, 20%, 30% more symmetrical, 40%, 50% more symmetrical. And then you make it 10% wonkier, 20% wonkier, 30, 40, 50. Now you have 11 pictures and one is your actual face. You scramble those faces up, pop them on a screen, have someone pick their face quickly. And your average person is going to pick a face that's about 20% more attractive than their actual face. The face
that's
heart,
that's kind of heartwarming, actually.
Oh,
how precious.
It really is. And of course, there's individual differences, people with low self-esteem that are going to pick the uglier ones and stuff. So whenever we're talking about these things, this is, you know, even finding that 60-70% of people are doing this is a fun, exciting finding, and it's not applicable to every single thing, but it's really worth noting. But what's wonderful about the scientific method, which is really imperfect, is it's always trying to correct it. So what I love about scientists, if you listen to my show, which is like, you know, next week I'm doing an episode about butterflies. No,
remind
one
us of the name of the
it's
new podcast.
It's called Here We Are. I've been doing it for 8 years, and what happens is I go in, I have imposter syndrome. I usually go like, here's how I think through what your research is, and then just hit me with it. What are all the gaps in my understanding? And then they tell me how wrong I am. And we have fun conversations, but what I found out really early on is not only will I talk with one person that's, say, an evolutionary biologist, will say this about gender differences, and then I talk to a sociologist who says the complete opposite about gender differences, or you hear a lot of like, actually, from scientists, but they also say, I don't know, more than any human I've ever, way more than I do. Mm-hmm. You ask me something, I'll start blabbing about it.
I'll give it a shot.
yeah, I'll take a whack at that sucker.
I could be right.
Exactly. I can't believe how often they say, I don't know. But not only is there, you know, conflict within the scientific community, but here's what really impresses me. I just know this from having done it. So I used to research a bunch ahead of time. And when I didn't know what I was doing, I just started looking at random publications that a scientist would write. And I'd try to make sense of it and read as much as I could to prepare for an interview. And then I'd ask them about their work. But it was from like 10 years ago or whatever. And every time they're like, actually, that hasn't really bared out totally. And the, you know, we've learned more since that time. And so, you know, people do hear things like that and be like, well, we don't want the vaccine to be like a, oh, whoopsies, actually, sort of thing. And I understand people's
smoking trepidation. Turns out it's bad for you. Or DDT, not so good.
yeah. And well, that was DDT. Smoking's not the best example because that was a fraud. That was a fraud. Like, that's the other thing you got to look out for too, is like, you can always find.
That actually is a good example in some ways, because there's so much money that the tobacco industry went straight to fraud for money. I mean, straight fraud. And that's sort of the main concern now, is like, there is so much money being pumped over to these companies. That truly is concerning on a human level. People go a little nutty when you've got $100 billion or something coming your way. I mean, that's crazy town money.
Yeah.
And so power.
It absolutely is. So what it often gets you is a couple people, you know. So the cigarette industry got some scientists to represent them in the court of law. The scientific community was never saying we should all be smoking cigarettes. They might have been a little blind to some of the thing, but the same with pain pills or anything else. Every academic that I've talked to is pretty darn skeptical of antidepressants. Some of them think they help in a lot of.
It's pretty mysterious, and
it's because you're talking about the brain. You're talking about the human brain, and you're also like, depression might not feel good, but that doesn't mean that there's not utility in it. It might not feel good to experience the pain of having your hand on a burner, but that is the alternative to that is your hand melting on a burner with you not knowing it until you smell
it. So people might say there might be an advantage to getting COVID and recovering. It could be an argument, right?
Right.
And that's a possibility. Yeah. Maybe not, but maybe.
Getting COVID might protect you from COVID.
Maybe that's better for you. you see what I'm saying.
Yeah. I'm not sure the logic totally adds up, but I've seen the argument. I've seen the argument made. I would say immune effects that happen from vaccines, and some of them are autoimmune effects that can impact people, but the immune effects of, like, you know, I was knocked out for a day and sleepy. Your immune system does stuff like that when there's a virus. So you'll have a fever because viruses don't do well in heat. Bats actually pack together really tightly, and that's how they keep viruses like mitigated within them when they're infected with certain viruses, and so that's why you get a fever. Sleeping is so you can delegate energy from everything else to your immune system. You know, it's like you get nauseous in a car because your brain mistakes it for a neurologic issue when you feel like you're moving, but you're looking at a dash or something like that. So there's misfires sometimes. And so that's what you're going to experience, is an immune response. Like if you actually get a cold, the snot in your nose is to protect. It's like, you better make sure that there's not more stuff coming in this form of filtration, a disgusting filtration system in our nose. It's not the virus itself doing that. That's the immune response to it that's doing that. And so the immune response that a virus is tricking your body into doing to it, adapting, is a lot more like feeling sore after going to the gym. Whereas COVID is a lot more like, you know, anywhere from pulling a muscle to having your
head chopped off,
explode, or your head chopped off, or something like that. So it's a flesh it's a wound. Different thing. Yeah, and when a virus gets in you and starts replicating in your cells, that's doing damage and sometimes breaking the blood-brain barrier, and it's damaging those cells. And then an immune response comes sometime after that. Like, for example, a lot of asymptomatic, it was found out well over, you know, I know myocarditis and stuff is all over in the news and our vaccines, myocarditis. Well, it was found out well over a year ago. They just took a random sampling of young athletes that had had COVID. Even some of them had just tested for COVID randomly and had never even experienced symptoms. And they scanned their hearts randomly. So, and then they found out that there was heart damage and evidence of myocarditis. What they've found since is what's happening is COVID is getting into the heart, and people that are asymptomatic don't even know that they have COVID and are exerting themselves quite a bit. Are actually COVID is damaging their heart before their immune response has taken over to alert them to the idea that they're sick. So a lot of times by the time you start experiencing symptoms, some damage has already been done. And so there is legitimate cause for concern, even if you don't feel sick. In fact, I have a Fitbit that alerts me if I have immune response systems that would you can have Lyme's disease for weeks before knowing it.
Yeah.
And so your immune response will start changing your heart rate and body temperature and other things before you consciously feel sick. So potentially there's ways like this that we can, through new studies and stuff, find out and get an alert, like your oil light going on your car. That's like, hey, you got something going on here. Maybe you just drank too much last night.
If only they could put that in a microchip and put it inside me, and they could just tell me about everything. Exactly. Maybe fix it, little nanobot.
Yeah, I mean, there's. First off, I would go full nanobot, but I wouldn't. I wouldn't mandate it, and I'm not sure how I feel about that. You know, the thing with mandates is that a lot of this is people don't like being told what to do. And going back to intuition, I would love to talk about the evolution of intuition and why it sometimes
thinking it'd be fun to do. I'm going to have to bounce soon. And I wanted to do a deeper conversation in intuition, free will.
Yeah.
And choice, because it's a big, big subject in my world. And I think it could be an interesting repartee.
I would love that. Yeah, we should do it again. But I will say that, just to finish the thought, I would consider myself, I mean, if there was credentials for being a rebel, I think that I would have a good number of them. You know, I've blazed my own path. I was always in detention growing up. I'm like known as the crazy one amongst my friends. No one takes everyone takes half of what I take. That sort of thing. I've been to jail. I didn't just think school was a prison. I find most of existence to be a prison that I am trapped in. And I don't like being told what to do either. And that has an uncalculated effect on a lot of people. So if you were to say, hey, there's this new STD going around, which no one's like, hey, do more push-ups and you don't need to worry about STDs. You know, we all know like other viruses spread. I think that's just a convenient way to dismiss what's going on when some of that talk happens. But we definitely should all be healthy. I've been working out a bunch. If we were to say, hey, condoms stop this disease spread. This is awful new. This is way worse than AIDS. So you just have to wear condoms for like a year or 3 months or 3 years or whatever. You have to wear condoms when you have sex. I bet that would be the least amount of condom use that there's ever been. You know, I bet.
This is where all the children being like, oh, really?
Yeah. But it's, you know what I'm saying? Like people would do just the opposite of what they're being told. And that wouldn't mean that condoms don't physically work. Like, so say I'm in Wisconsin, you're in Idaho. So say in Wisconsin, they have volunteer, they just merely suggest that you wear condoms. In Idaho, they mandate that you wear condoms. It wouldn't surprise me to find out that Idaho has more of a spread because they were using condoms less because of the adverse effect of giving people a mandate and people being like, fuck you, don't tell me what to do. And it being even sexier to not wear a condom because it's more dangerous.
Rebel.
Right? But it doesn't change the objective reality that a condom itself will protect people from that STD. But the implementation of trying to create public policy around that objective reality is a very subjective, messy thing. And one thing that they've failed miserably at is they just haven't had enough psychologists and like behavioral economics people and things like that. They've just had virologists going, here's what you need to know. Here's what COVID looks like. Isn't this a neat thing? And this is what it does to your cell and a bunch of stuff that no one's going to understand. I've taken infectious disease classes, which by the way, science isn't a secret. Anyone can take any online classes they want and you can learn so much. It'll help you get rid of that Dunning-Kruger stuff where you overestimate how much you know about something. You take one 101 class and you'll realize, oh my God, I know nothing about this subject. I can't imagine what it's like to study it for 30 years. And I am sympathetic for people not responding to the bland, virology involved in this. And I guess that's why, like, you know, if someone follows me on Twitter, I wouldn't blame them for hating everything that I do on there. But I'm also hashing out ideas to play around and poke fun at what I feel are logical holes in things as like it's how I workshop, and I don't get to get on stage because I haven't been able to perform.
That's what I said. The live comedians is the tricksters, the reflection, the poking the holes in our veils of righteousness. We need it. And it's as long as you know. It's just funny when we start to get into our own camps as people, and then even the comedians are like, you know, pick a tribe and run with it
especially when there's incentive to get on certain shows or, you know, whatever else. There's lots of incentive, and there's ways to cater to. Look, if someone writes a book out there and they want to sell that book, they're going to go, well, how would I get on the Today Show? How would I get on Oprah? How would I get on my local news?
Mainstream malaise, blah, bullshit, pander. Yeah. I mean, that's why as we get most media, right? It's just what works. What do we think people want?
Yeah, and you're catering to a specific demographic, and you maybe write the book with that in mind too. Yeah. You maybe position your character with that in mind, and
yeah.
I don't know. It's messy, man. You know, I think that's the troubling thing with some of the credentialed people out there, that people have this distrust and look for evidence for that, and it's very easy to find if you want to find it, because you aren't seeing both sides when you see two people, because if you wanted to see like both sides of what shape is the earth, you would have every scientist except one on one side. You would have to interview like a million scientists on one side and like against this one flat earther over here. But that flat earther can get way more attention than all these other boring scientists that don't even have a Twitter account, which is usually the case. So say you were a snail researcher, right? And you just spent your lifetime learning everything there is to know about snails. And then you're like 30 years into it, and like, you know, I go to scientists' houses all the time. They live in modest homes and drive like really like very practical. They're a practical folk. They'll drive their like 10-year-old Subaru or whatever. So I see where they live. So you're like in this, you know more about snails than anyone. You want to capitalize on this. What do you do? Well, you could write a book about snails. I promise you, no one's going to give a fuck about your sciency snail book. You'll sell a couple copies. But what you could do instead is come up with some sort of cure-all, some sort of snail supplement thing, and then you back it up. You go, well, actually, there's certain snail grease that gets used in Band-Aids as adhesive, and I discovered that it can be used to get the wrinkles out of your face.
Booyah, ka-ching.
And then you can get on whatever wellness or Gwyneth Paltrow's thing or whatever, and you have every other snail researcher in the world going, what the fuck is this guy saying? What is he doing? And then people are getting sick from the snail grease they're rubbing on their face or breaking out, and so they get they have a falling out with the university that they're at. Well, now that's something that you can use to get publicity. Now you go, this snail agent that they don't want you to hear how to get rid of your wrinkles, because they want you to be wrinkled and old looking. And I'm fighting the good fight against these rigid academic systems that they won't hear my side of a thing. It's like, nah, dude, you're a grifter. And you know it. And everyone that actually knows their shit knows it too. But no one's going to listen to all the boring ass snail researchers.
Well, the grifters give a bad name to the middle ground too, or not even, let's not even call it middle. They're just like the space of nuance and unknowns, yeah, and questions. And that's the space that is just gone right now. So yeah. I don't know, man. That's how we're going to end this one.
It's a complicated situation.
I don't know.
I don't know. It's great. I don't know. The best.
I don't know. I don't know how it's going to all pan out. And
I don't know. Always a better go-to answer if we can start training that into our intuition a little more. I don't know what positive change that could create, but I think it would be good for us.
Well, I like your sheet. I think you got a good thing going here, and I'm excited to dig into the new pod. And
Mind Under Matter, I'm so excited. Listen, my podcast, Here We Are, it's my nerdy thing. It's a hobby. It's I've been doing it for a while. When I was touring around, I would just interview scientists about random things. It's just a mixed bag. I don't look for a thing. I just find a random person. And like I said, I did like two COVID episodes last year. I know it's in the zeitgeist and everything else, but I don't dwell on it on the show that much. But it's certainly not for everybody because it's a little tedious and a little dry sometimes. But if
wonderful
you're into
endorsement,
science, it'll be fantastic. But I will say, I think an easier way into me and what I do, my podcast Mind Under Matter with Ramin Nasr, has some of the same ideas, but like headier and a little more philosophical, like we're having. And it's super funny. Ramin Nasr is the funniest person I've ever met, and he's an incredible artist. And
love to meet him. Yeah.
Oh yeah, I gotta connect you guys because you gotta. Please. Have you not listened to Mind Under Matter yet?
No, but I will now. I'll pull it up right as we're talking, and so I'll have it here.
I never listen to podcasts. I'm not insulted that you have. But if you just go and watch like a couple clips on
there
our social
is.
Media,
I like the
you'll
art.
Get to. You'll get to see. Yeah, we make a piece of art for every episode, but you'll get to see how frickin' funny Ramin Nasr is, and he's super thoughtful. And so the idea with the podcast is I'm the guy that interviews scientists. Ramin's been interviewing mystics and creative types.
Oh, cool.
for a long time, and so it's us having these sorts of conversations having right now. So you would be totally into Ramin. You probably like him more than me, and we both like each other.
Right,
thanks for having me.
Yeah,
let me know when
fun.
You want to have that free will conversation, because boy oh boy, I would love to have that.
Yeah, I'm sure you have myself. I'm guessing you have a different perspective than me, and maybe or not, but different ideas, and I think it'd be good to mash them together. And I remember like way back we did a whole podcast, and at the end you're like, well, or maybe I just haven't smoked DMT recently. And it's like, and I appreciate this idea of like, you know, where our perspectives come from and what they're resting on, especially when we get into this idea of choice, which is a really fundamental part of like my whole ethos. But I recognize it's slippery, but that's actually what I like about it. So it'd be fun to get into it.
Absolutely. Anytime you want. Yeah, I have my favorite scientist in the entire world. Robert Sapolsky, who wrote a book called Why Zebras Don't Have Ulcers. He's a stress researcher, neuroscientist, and primatologist. And he's the best scientist that there is. And he's so kind and funny and wonderful. And he wrote a book called Behave, about kind of like where some of our demons and stuff come from. And he has a new book coming out called Determined. That is
determined. Oh boy.
He makes a real pretty good case for determinism from a scientific point of view that
I'm already angry.
that you might. Yeah. I mean,
no, it's important. It's important. I think cause that's what's so beautiful about it to me is that it's a both and for me. It's like, it's this amazing soup of like animal and spiritual for me. And that's what makes it juicy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like that's why it's so cool being a human, you know, like all the things we're able to experience, it's just nuts, especially when you get into psychedelics. It's like, how is this possible? All this can coexist with such a base level animal that I am.
So here's our topics that I want to talk about. You can bring your own. On the next episode, I want to talk about the evolution of our intuition and how it's mismatched potentially with our modern world. And I want to talk about, in terms of free will, what interests me the most is why we care.
Why we care.
Why we care in what situations where we care the most.
Sure. Yeah. And you might be infuriated by some of my answers because there's...
Good. I'm looking for a good...
It breaks down into...
I don't get myself worked up enough these days. I want to
I don't get infuriated.
I need that infuriation fix. That's what I need. Sorry, I interrupted you. What
frustration is the doorway. I mean, in some ways it truly is. It's like there's a breakdown of cognitive like determinism in itself. And that's sort of like... It's more Eastern. It's to say, like, it's like a Buddhist koan. It's like the answers start to become the unanswerable. But I mean, that is the doorway, you know. But then
love
it's just
it.
Poetry.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Let me know as soon as you want to. In the meantime, definitely have Ramin Nasr on. You will be absolutely thrilled.
Dig it, man. Dig it. Well, this was fun. Great to see you. Glad you're healthy.
Great to see you. Thanks for having me.
And keep up the sheet. I dig it.
All right. See you, dude.
Thanks, Shane. That was fun. I like talking to you. And I may your beard grow with aplomb and wonder. And as soon as we feel like our pandemic has rounded whatever corner it's going to round, we're fully like a good turn around it, you're going to have to shave it off. But I look forward to talking to you again. And thank you, everyone, for subscribing and giving reviews. You can give reviews now on Spotify. So if you're a listener over there, thanks for getting us going. And thanks to everyone on the council. And go check out the new merch we have. It's another way you can support this podcast aside from joining our Patreon on our council on Patreon. We have dad hats there now and a new shirt. So check it out. All that's at eastforest.org, including the council on Patreon. All right, my friends, I look forward to seeing some of you on the road soon, but otherwise I'll see you next week here in the virtual space. But you keep walking your walk. Don't take any shit, but if you do, do it with grace.
Inside.